Welcome to the Upstaging Gentlemen podcast. This is Michael with Play With Your Food Productions.
And this is Nathan Prince with Legendary Productions.
So thank you for joining us today.
What's up? Sorry, I had to clear my throat.
Clear that throat.
Hey, today we're going to talk about something kind of cool and exciting. I'm going to be kind of asking Mike about a project he has coming up and a script he wrote. Actually, Mike, before I get into some questions, can you give the title and the synopsis of the show? Kind of just give us a brief summary of the show and what it's about. And then I kind of want to ask you about your process and all that.
Yeah, so it's called The Girl in the Picture. And it's a little bit of a ghost story. I always like ghost stories.
Yeah.
You like a good ghost story?
I do.
I love ghost stories. And so this one, I wanted to set out to write one. And usually, you know, my other shows are all comedies. This show is not a comedy. This is, it's a more of a suspense.
Is there anything funny in it at all?
A few lines. There's no circumstantial humor.
Right.
There may be just like a few lines here and there.
When does it open actually?
Opens May 12th. Actually, a month from today. We're filming. Today is April 12th that we're filming. And so 1 month from today, this opens at the Ramona Hillside Playhouse out in Hemet.
We're recording for a month from today. I got you. Yeah, I'm going to come see that. I'm actually going to come check that out.
You're going to come check it out?
Yeah, because I've seen a few of your shows, but you do a lot of comedy. I like to see the ghost story. It'd be kind of fun.
I'm excited for it. And I'm not quite sure exactly how it will turn out yet, but I got the idea. There was a friend of my dad. I will say this much. This is a little bit of a spoiler, but there was a friend of my dad's, and she, I'm not sure how old she was, but she was must have been maybe up in her late 70s, early 80s, and she had passed away, and I was with my dad. We were cleaning out her apartment, and she had this chair, and by the chair was a flashlight. And then on the wall were pictures of her family. And he told me that, like, hey, you know what she used to do? She used to shut all the lights in the apartment off, and she'd sit in the chair, and she'd take the flashlight, and she'd shine the flashlight on the picture, and she'd talk to these people at nighttime.
What?
And it weirded me out.
Yeah, that freak anyone out.
But then, it weirded me out enough to be like, I couldn't get it out of my head. And for years, I was thinking about it, and I was like, what if they answered back? What if, and just the possibilities started coming there. And then so it evolved into the story of a clairvoyant who could do just that, who could take a flashlight, shut all the lights off, shine it on the picture, and channel these people until they came. And so that's kind of a little bit, that's not the entire premise of the story, but that's a basic part of the story, essential thing right there. So it's not a comedy. It is a little on the creepy side. Like I don't expect that anybody is going to be jumping in their seat. It doesn't have any, you know, cheap things like that. Nothing's going to make people jump.
Scares.
It's not going to have any of those, but I think it's got a great storyline, and it may be just enough to, give you some chills if you,
Is the dialogue kind of creepy, or is it just like, oh crap, this could be maybe me, or this could happen to me kind of thing? Like, what makes it creepy? Or is it to give away too much?
Well, yeah, I'm trying to keep it like tight on this one.
Okay.
But
don't tell me too much, because I do want to be surprised, and I want the listeners to be surprised too.
But I will say that we've managed to. Oh God, I just want to talk about it now. You know what? For those listening, you get a bit of the storyline.
Yes.
All right. So there.
What's it based on? Who's your lead? I remember we talked about this a couple episodes ago. April, right?
So April is one of the ghosts.
Oh,
in the house.
I saw your advertisements all over, and I saw a couple headshots. And stuff.
Yeah, so we try to leave it like ambiguous, like what is this? But the more that we release it, we're giving like little teasers about it. Okay. Well, it starts off when this clairvoyant. The opening scene is she has
this what
the clairvoyant. She can talk to the dead.
Oh, okay, because I'm not good with big words.
Well, now we've learned one, clairvoyance.
Clairvoyance.
Maybe you need a clairvoyant to be part of your constituency.
Dang.
Look at the
And use some idioms.
And use of idioms.
I was actually Googling as you said. Go ahead.
But at the start of the show, she's just died. And she's got three of her old time friends in her living room, and they're, you know, talking about it, and they're saying, well, somebody's, they don't know the situation that she has died under. They just know that she's died. It looked like it was a heart attack, but when they came in and found her, she was in her chair and the flashlight was in her hand and it was turned on. And so she was in the middle of some kind of a communication. The doctors had said, this is a heart attack. So they're not sure exactly what to make of this. So they call her grandson in, and he comes back to the house. Well, he lived in the house for a very short time when he was 17. And when he was 18, his grandma kicked him out of the house. And he also had the gift of clairvoyancy too. And we'll just say this, because I this would have been me when I was 17. I absolutely know for a fact this would have been you when you were 17. But the grandma puts this, you know, a picture of a girl on the wall, and she's trying to contact this girl. She's working with the police to try to solve a case and try to find out what happened to this girl that's died. And the boy's looking at the picture, and he is able to make contact with the girl.
Oh, man.
So that's the girl in the picture. And she comes out, and there is a romantic flair there. And when the grandma finds out, she's like, no, you're leaving the house. Don't ever come back. Because I think the grandma knows, she's enough of a clairvoyant and knows about these things to know that there is a danger in that.
Right.
So she's like, you know, I know you think this ghost is your friend. This ghost is not. Go away. And he doesn't understand that. And he doesn't come back to the house until she has died. And then the show starts, you know, he's back in the house. And
it's like a novel, dude. You could have wrote a book off of this.
The hardest thing about writing the show is that it would have been better off as one of those Netflix series. It was a really hard show to write because
to keep it in that time frame.
Because it has flashbacks, it goes back and forth. And I was like, as I was writing, I'm like, this would be so much easier as a film script.
Yeah, like it sounds like a film or a book.
The architecture of this show was probably the hardest I've ever had to do.
Could you turn it into like a book series? It sounds really like in depth.
I wrote it so that there's a paranormal investigator named Dr. Catherine Garrett, and she Dr. Catherine Garrett, and she is the paranormal investigator. And my idea is, if this first show goes well, I could make it into a series with her.
Yeah.
Like going to other.
Sounds really cool.
And just, you know, have her investigate, almost like a Sherlock Holmes type of a thing where she's got lots of different adventures and things that she goes on. But so she's actually the kind of the lead character. Mm. Her and the grandson briefly had a brief romance in college, and then she went off to do her paranormal investigations, her books. But then he calls her up and is like, hey, can you come help me? My grandma just died under a mysterious circumstance. There may be a hostile spirit in the house. Can you come check it out before I move back in?
Wow.
And so that's sort of the premise. It's got some good surprises along the way right there. But I will tell you this. I didn't set out to write this show or to direct this show. I finished my Play With Your Food season, and at the Ramona Hillside Play, this was, you know, last year. And usually, I don't know, I kind of, after Play With Your Food ends, I kind of crash for a couple right. months.
Recoup.
Recharge, and then get back into it. But I've done several plays in May at the Ramona Hillside Playhouse, but they didn't have a director for this time around. And I hadn't submitted any, you know, proposals or anything. And they asked me just like, do you got a show that you'd like to do? I'm like, nope. And so just on the spot, I'm like, I'll write one. I'll debut one. And I kind of had this one in the back of my head for a little bit, but I'm like, I've got a year to make it happen now.
Do you remember in the spa, you gave me like a brief summary of like what you were thinking about? I think, was this the one that you were
talking? Did I already tell you this?
Not all in depth like this. You just had a very small kind of, idea of it, and this is definitely more elaborate. You told me it's like, I don't remember. It was a while ago. The last time I was at your house, actually.
I may have told you a different one because there's another one that I want to debut, actually, what? Maybe at Play With Your Food.
Which one's that one about, real quick? Just a brief sentence.
It's about a singer.
Nope.
Nope, not about that one.
Okay, but anyway.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, so I kind of just jumped into the situation, and I think that there's a takeaway for some listeners right there, just in that when a situation comes to you, take the opportunity. I mean, take the – like, you never know when stuff is going to come, but, like, rise to the occasion. I mean, I made up my mind right there. I didn't – Nathan, I did not have one piece of the script written
at this point. So how long did it take you?
Well, I got to writing over the summer, and I finished it probably 2 days before the auditions.
Wait, what?
That's not true. I finished a week after the auditions. I got it. I was right up to about 95%, but I just kept improving it. Like, I knew that I had the – if you had put a gun to my head and said, you have to finish this in December, I could have, but – I knew that I had time. I kept going back. I read it. I reread it. I'd let it sit. I'd let it incubate.
So if you were to give the exact time frame, how long would it take to finish, start as soon as you put pen to paper or finger to keyboard, whatever?
I probably, if I had to, if it's all I did, probably a couple weeks. I cannot say that it would have been the same quality because I really used the time to think about it. Like, I would let it sit there. Like, I would sometimes let it sit there for a week or two. I would look at it, and then I'd go back and read it, and I'd be like, oh, that doesn't make sense. I need to explain more here, or this scene's not as good as, like, I need to punch up the dialogue right here. So I used my time well, but I've written stuff in shorter time than that. As you know, I've written stuff in shorter time for you.
Oh, big time, yes.
Yeah,
in seconds.
But I knew that I had a year to prepare for it, so I planned to take the full year to do it. And I will say for the cast there, having them come in and be the first people to read these lines ever, like getting to hear the lines read out loud for the first time, that did take it up to like a new level for me.
You actually get to hear the voices come to life.
Yeah,
and put faces to the characters.
But yeah, but then you also start to see what part of the dialogue works and what part of the dialogue doesn't work. Do you remember the interview that we did with Kathy? It's a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, your biggest fan.
Kathy, my biggest fan.
Yeah.
And do you remember she, because I've been thinking about this. She mentioned like one of her favorite things about reading my plays was the inner dialogue.
Yeah.
I believe her, the inner voice.
The voices that she can hear you writing.
And so there's where it gets very different is because I think, you know, I do have that, like ever since she started saying that, I was like realizing like, oh yeah, that is there. And then when I hear the actors read it and they interpret it differently, that's where it gets like, I don't know if this works anymore because that actor's playing it different from a very specific way. So I may have to either go back and rewrite it a little bit for the actor or just let the actor kind of just go. Like I tell them, you know, a lot, like, hey, not all the lines necessarily have to be exact. If you want to reword this, I mean, this has never, ever been done before. So I know that we're going to be finding improvements, little ways right. to improve all throughout. We're going to stumble on little things and we have been finding those. And it's just cool to see it as it makes the evolution from just a little script, a stack of paper up until actually coming to life on stage and these, you know, living, breathing characters right over here. And it's a huge trust thing that they gave to me too. I mean, committing to a show that has never been done before. Yeah. Many of these people came out and I'm doing a show with them for the first time and they're being incredibly gracious, you know, as they go through this. I was just very gracious for them to even audition for an original show. It's exciting, but you also never know what you're going to get.
Right.
Like, I'm sure we've all heard the people say like, yeah, I wrote a script. And then for those of you at home, Nathan just gave a big eye roll.
Yes.
Right
all
there.
The time.
But you never know if these things are going to work or not. You just don't. And so on an original show, it really means even a lot more to me when people will give you that trust and will come out and be a part of it. And I don't know, it's a like a little emotional bond with the cast right there because
you start with that connection already.
Yeah.
What is your process with when you're writing a show, Mike? What is your process as far as the set, the location? Like when you're writing a script, do you think about how you're going to build, what set you're going to build, what costumes you're going to have? Is that all part of your internal kind of dialogue that you have? Or
an internal dialogue with myself?
Yeah. Well, you said you have a voice for each character, and like Kathy talked about that too. So when you're writing the show, are you envisioning the scenes and all that already? Or do you just worry about the dialogue first and then figure out the set, costuming, and all that after?
Well, I think always in the back of my head is it's got to be something that I can pull off. Because I know that it's probably the first run is going to start with me. And, you know, then hopefully other places will end up doing it, or the publisher will pick it up and they'll distribute it. But for me, it's got to be something that I can do in my theater right off the bat. So there's those limitations right there. But as I mentioned, like, you know, in an earlier podcast, if I'm writing a script, I also try to make it very accessible to community theaters and schools and colleges and, you know, stuff, but at places that may not have like the big budget.
Right.
Like, so when I just read a script yesterday and the thing had like 20 locations and I'm like, there's just no way. This is such a difficult script to pull off right here.
Right.
And so I try to not do that. This script has got one location. It's one house. It doesn't take anything like ridiculous to try to pull the episode or the show off. It can be easily done. The costumes are easily accessible to people. There's nothing that
are, so when you're writing a script, you try to make it very easy to do so anyone can do it.
Yeah,
that's good.
Like I literally read the script yesterday, and it called for Batman to walk in. It literally said this in the script. Batman walks in, and I'm like, where am I going to get a Batman costume? Like, that doesn't look like completely like cheap, like Walmart at Halloween time. Like, where am I going to find a costume for Batman that you can use for only, you know, less than 30 seconds in the show? It literally calls for Batman to walk into a restaurant and he leaves. And
you read that script?
Well, that was about the moment that I started to put the script down. I kept reading more of it. I found the script. I bought the script because there was a monologue from the script that I really liked. And I saw the monologue. Oh, this is great. And then I get the script and it's a bunch of scenes that don't take – they're maybe 2 minutes each, and a bunch of different locations, a bunch of different – costumes, and it was like, I don't know, this doesn't seem like the most manageable of shows. Like, yes, it can it be staged, absolutely, but it seems like a little bit, at least for my taste, a little bit difficult. And I know for the taste of a lot of other producers, directors in community theater, that kind of stuff is a little bit difficult unless you're going complete minimalistic for the set.
I see.
Nice. But so, yeah, all to answer your question, there is always a limitation for me right there.
That's what I was wondering. When you're writing, do you talk yourself out of stuff because you're worried that's too big?
This is why I said it would be so much easier as a TV show or like a series or something because then you could show more than one location. And a lot of it is like, okay, how can I make this entire storyline fit into the living room of this house, because there's so much more I would like to do, but there's that limitation of the stage right there. And that's where it really would lend itself better to something that could show a few different locations, like a graveyard scene, for instance, would have been great. But
they have to go to that location.
And yeah. And then, yes, we could have put a graveyard on the stage and split it up, but it was, I don't know. Then it looks a little bit weird. Right off there, but
well, you don't want it to look like you just threw it in there to have another location. You want it to look right if you're going to do it as well. It's both.
Yeah, I mean, if you needed another location on a stage play, I think you really got to argue for that other location. Like, it's because you can't do the show without that other location. And I could do the show without the other location. It just would have been cooler if we could have gone to a graveyard for the scene, or if we could have gone back to the scene of some murders or to a police station instead of just having the conversations take place in the living room. That's where.
That's what I love about one of the things I like about your writing, Mike, is, and I talked about this a few episodes back and quite frequently, but there's a lot of people that write, especially first time writers, they give you a script. And you go, okay, it's 3 hours long. On paper, it looks like it's only maybe an hour long. Mm-hmm. But when you get on stage, have people go up and do the blocking, the choreography, or just blocking, or transitions. Well, you got a 3 hour show, and you want us to go to 23 different locations. That's not practical. And I think that's something that you do very well. I've always thought that about you. I mean, obviously, you've had some shows where you're like, ah, crap, I have a lot of locations. But overall, I think that's one of your strong points is when you're writing a show that you think about, how would this practically work? Can we go from a subway to an airplane in like a blackout?
Like, and I guess that's the big difference between a straight play and a musical, mm-hmm. is that in musicals, nobody thinks anything about like people changing the set, like a song starts. Like, I don't, John, our sound guy. Like, I remember. Do you remember John? Like years ago, we were talking about it, and you just sat down at your keyboard and started playing. Like, I'm going to the city. Bump, bump, bump. The city. Let's go to the city. Bump, bump, bump. We're going to the city now. And all of a sudden, people start walking around with wheeling flats on, and it starts coming together, and the lights change, and people are dancing. Look, now we're in the city. Yeah. And like, and there's Joe's Cotton Candy Stand. The city. The city.
And then that is musical theater. To some degree, that is. But I think that's what a good director tries to make it be, where it doesn't happen like that. Like, somehow you end it up there as opposed to, let us make this change in front of your face. And that's when you get a good script, you get less of that cheese ball transition.
So. Well, I think that people like that. You know what genre that went really well in is probably like the, I don't know, middle of the 1900s theater that would come out there. I mean, just this is, you know, like the, to say like, I don't know, Oklahoma Guys and Dolls.
Yeah.
Those kind of like, it just worked for that kind of stuff. My Fair Lady, Showboat. It's just like, that's the type of thing. Like, you change a scene and everybody expects that to happen. A big happy number, big chorus comes out and the scene changes, but that can't really happen with the straight stage play.
No,
And especially if you're trying to hold like mine is a suspenseful, you know, romantic suspense mystery. And that would just take you right out of the mood if they're like, well, that was really cheesy. Like,
yeah, you know, probably anything. Comedy, you're building something. You don't want to draw people out and go, wah, wah, and just kind of stop momentum.
You know, another actress I just want to give a shout out to right now is Monica Reichel, who she's – don't give me that look.
Where am I?
No, because I want to give a shout out to Monica, because this is my third original show that she has done. Mm. And that's brave to go out and be.
You must have done something right if she's coming back three times. Three shows and they're all originals?
Yeah. Well, you know why? Because she likes it when her name gets to be in the front of the script when it's published.
Oh.
That's why. So this is third time the charm.
That's cool. I'm sure there's other reasons. You're probably a good director. Are you in the show? Are you in the show, the girl in the picture?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was just curious. Why do you ask?
Well, because I know you're in quite a bit of shows. And I was just curious if you're in this one.
Yeah. But you know what? I actually told the bowl of the – because normally I just play with your food. Like, if I just want to do a part, I will just cast myself. But I told the board at Ramona Hillside Playhouse that, like, if somebody showed up and, like – and there are board members in the room, if somebody showed up that could do the part, I would give it to them. But
aren't you the director?
Yeah.
So you could just say, nah, it's not what I'm looking for.
What I was looking for didn't show up.
Yeah, that's what I thought you'd say.
No, but No, but I want to give the shout out to Monica because like three times she's done original scripts of mine. And that's cool. That means like a lot because she's, it's a huge talent. Like she's very, very talented. She can do shows anywhere and she's coming to do a script that's never been done before. And she's like somebody that I trust a lot. Like I know that she's going to like fully invest in a character right there. And then we'll give the other shout out while we're talking about Kathy is she ended up, you know, after the audition or after the interview, she came out and auditioned for the part of April and got it.
Oh.
So nailed it. So
she's, but you know, what's really cool about that is because she was even mentioning that she really liked that character in the outline you were showing her. You know, said there was two other ones. I think
it was funny because I went back. I hadn't heard the answers to when you gave her the question. So it was funny because I heard her say like that, of all the characters that I wrote that she would want to play Amelia Earhart.
Yeah.
And now like, now she's April. I think April is going to give Amelia Earhart a run for her money.
Like, no, she said that. I'm sure you listened to the whole podcast, but she mentioned April in there saying that it was a hard toss up between the two of those, actually. She said she doesn't know the full character because she didn't see the full script yet, but she read a lot of the stuff you were letting her sample. And she said she really resonates with that and really liked it. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I had some releases of the partial scripts that I would give to some certain people.
Yeah, let them
and there was
it out.
there was one actor that turned me down, and I was like, I don't know if he turned it down because he didn't like the script, or he said he was too busy. But I don't know. When I send out a script and I ask somebody like, hey, I'd really love it if you do this. I didn't hear I'm too busy. I heard I don't like your script. And so, you know, maybe
is this person a friend of yours?
Yeah, it's somebody that I've done a lot of shows with.
Want to call him out on our podcast and say wah wah wah?
No, because maybe he really was too busy. And I just say that because there's just like this. It just becomes personal. It's like such a, there is so much invested in this thing, and you're just like, oh, I really, really want, you know, this person. But as you said, you know what? We got the cast that I think that we were supposed to get.
Yeah. And it's going to be the way it's supposed to be. I really believe that.
Yeah. And just now seeing it all come together, it's, I'm excited for it. A month from today.
So what's the opening date again?
It's going to open May 12th, Friday, May 12th.
Friday, May 12th. And you run how long?
We run a couple weeks.
So a couple weekends or weeks?
Yeah. Two weekends.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Two weekends, seven shows.
Okay, sweet. Well, yeah, we'll probably talk about it on a couple other podcasts, just put it out there. And where do they go to look for tickets or information on it?
They can go to the Ramona Hillside Playhouse.
Ramona Hillside Playhouse?
Yeah, I forget the website. If you Google Ramona Hillside Players in Hemet, their website will come up. I think it's the RamonaHillsidePlayers.org.
Okay.
And they've got a Facebook page. They've got an Instagram page. You can go right to the website and order tickets right from the website. Or you can you can call in the reservation line, but you can choose what seats you want. They've got a little seating map. You can choose whatever seats you want there. So pretty good setup right there.
One last question before we wrap up this episode.
Yeah.
Are you going to put it out there to get published? Is that your plan, goal?
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as we get this one around, I would love to get a good video of it and then would love to send it into hopefully the same publisher that has got Bad Medicine and The Cursed Bones.
Do you know if this is just for people listening that are trying to get their stuff published? Sure. Is it better to have a video to submit with your script or do they not want video submission? They just want the script.
Well, a lot of the places want proof that it's been done. And so just the fact that if you've even got just still pictures of it or something.
Just to show it up. So you could trick them. You could just get people in costumes and have some lights on and go, look at this production. It's successful.
You could.
Why don't you do that?
You know, well, because since we actually are putting the show on, it would be just as easy to get the video.
I guess.
You know.
Doesn't sound as fun, but yeah. No, it's dishonest, right? Wink, wink, whatever.
But what, you know, one of the things that I try to always have, I try to have some sort of form of press release or review. If we had like a theater critic that comes to review the shows, like hopefully it comes out and it gets a good review, and then I can send the review in to them. I can send some still shots. I can tell them that we've got a video available. But the video helps, like if they want to know, like, well, did the crowd like this? I mean, listen, you can hear them laughing. You can see the reaction. You can see, this is the real thing.
And experience how they respond to the show.
Yeah. That's and cool. I think that they want actor or not actors. They want the playwright to have seen the play stage, because when you see the play stage, that's where you really learn whether something works or not. It can look absolutely great on paper, but then, you know, it gets up on stage and stuff starts to be a little bit different than you expect.
Sweet, sweet.
So, all right. So
well, thanks to you for answering those questions. Yeah. Support Mike out and support Ramona Hill, Hillside Players. Support them as well.
The girl in the picture, May 12th, 1 month from today. I think it's going to be, well, probably like 2 weeks from today once we...
once this airs.
Once this airs. But
they still know May 12th, right?
May 12th, that's yeah. Easy. You know what? It could be a great success. It could be a grand disaster, but you should come out on opening night and experience with opening night. It's going to be the first time anybody has seen the show, and I'm super excited.
And people
for
like
that.
Both. They like successes and disasters, so that's okay.
Well, we'll provide you with one or the other. Probably no middle ground.
Well, good. So,
all right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Upstaging Gentlemen. Thank you, Nathan, for the questions.
It was awesome. See you guys soon.
All right. We'll catch you later.